Welcome to Move Like This, brought to you by the Accounting Move Project and sponsored by Moss Adams and Sapro. On this podcast, we share ideas and hear from guests about how they find, retain, develop, and advance women and other underrepresented groups in their accounting firms. Now, on to our guest. Hello, and thank you for being here today for this exciting episode of Move Like This. I am talking to one of my favorite people, and interestingly, my very first guest when I launched this podcast about a year ago, Mary McGuire. She is the CEO and founder of MJM Talent Solutions, and I am super excited to have you here today, Mary.
Oh, Bonnie, I'm always delighted to talk to you, and we always have such great conversations, so excited to be here as well.
Well, when we talked before, you were with Sapro.
Yes.
And now you have launched this new, exciting MJM Talent Solutions.
Isn't that wonderful? What better time to announce the launch of MJM Talent Solutions, a new woman-owned consulting firm committed to transforming workplaces by optimizing talent, delivering business success, and championing inclusivity. Women's History Month, where we celebrate women's incredible journeys, past and present. It is an exciting time for me.
Yes, definitely. What is it that you're doing now in this new role and with this new company?
What I'm trying to do with the launch of MJM Talent Solutions is to take the experience that I've garnered through years of experience working with the industry leaders and put them into practice, allowing myself to work with key organizations as a trusted advisor and partner, optimizing not only their talent processes with the lens towards diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, but also optimizing their business. So from my perspective, that's where I can take the gifts, the education, the experience and expertise, and put it to good practice.
I love that. And as you said, optimizing not only the opportunities, but the businesses themselves, so many times those two things go hand in hand and people don't necessarily realize that.
They certainly do.
So while women have certainly made strides in the accounting profession over the last decades and years, we are still far from equity in leadership. I would kind of like to know why you think this is the case and how firms can create a culture where women want to work and want to move into leadership and spend their careers with that particular firm.
Well, I agree with you. Despite the progress, I have seen that women remain underrepresented and actually underpaid worldwide. So I think we need to break down the barriers, not only in accounting, but beyond. So let me position this a little bit. When I consider what is happening in the market, I look to the market data and I look to industry leaders to guide some of my decisions and my perceptions. And I use a multitude of resources. So when I say women remain underrepresented and underpaid, that is not just perspective from Mary McGuire. The World Health Forum's 2023 Gender Gap Report actually reveals a staggering truth. A mere 68.6% of pay parity. So women are disproportionately affected in the pay category. This signals a very slow climb from the setback in 2020, when again, women were disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So when you say to yourself, when will pay parity happen? At our current pace, full pay parity remains 131 years away, which is staggering. So my question to everyone is, why? Well, I think it really goes back to the roots of deep systemic barriers. And there's a lot to unpack. It would take a lot more than just a few minutes to discuss it, but I'd like to highlight a few points. There are historical norms, implicit bias, work-life balance, stereotypes still exist, perceptions, lack of role models, and a need for transparency in decision-making for businesses. And this comes to pay, promotion opportunities, hiring opportunities. Additionally, all policies, processes, and programs need to be viewed through the lens of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. So those are just a few areas. Now, Bonnie, I know your audience is probably going to be saying, well, that sounds great. We know that. But what's the path forward? Well, it's going to take a cultural transformation. Firms must commit to a cultural shift. Diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging must be embedded in the organization's DNA. So it starts with the strategy and actually applying it to the strategy and securing leadership buy-in. Senior leaders are the best champions for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. Any initiative is bound to fail without a CEO and senior leadership commitment. They need to receive the proper training, guidance, and support to ensure that they're positioned for optimal success. I would also encourage everyone to look at data-driven strategies. And it's not data for making quotas. Let's not confuse it with an affirmative action plan, because that's a baseline. When I say data for good, use data measures that matter to track progress, identify improvement areas, and inform decision-making. I would also encourage professionals to make this information transparent. As the world changes, we're seeing the onset of ESG. And ESG is environmental social governance. And that is actually asking for more transparency from companies on their metrics and what they're doing for the environment, for social matters, and for governance. So when you're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, make sure that you're driving accountability through regular communications of metrics and making sure that your employees, stakeholders, and leaders are aware of the progress and some of the challenges you might be running into.
I completely agree on the measurement side of things because you can't improve what you're not measuring. You don't know what progress you've
Absolutely
made.
not.
Roadblocks fit.
And it doesn't require a ton of metrics. I mean, basic metrics really can tell a very compelling story. You have to know to look at the right metrics and then translate it into what does that mean to me? And how do I take this information, apply it, and elevate awareness? That's where ongoing education comes in. This area continues to morph, evolve. So recognizing what kind of training, when to deliver it, not only can mitigate biases, but it actually can increase cultural competencies. So again, you've got to have that balance and be open. I would encourage everybody to be humble when they approach this area because we're all learning.
Absolutely. One of the things that we were talking about beforehand was the idea of pipeline development. And I was recently in a meeting with a number of other consultants to the accounting profession. There's a really big project going on right now that is supported by the AICPA, not sponsored by the AICPA. And Jennifer Wilson with Convergence Coaching is very involved in, I believe, a
Wonderful.
co-chair. And they were talking about with so many people eligible for retirement, so many people deciding that accounting is just not the career path they want to choose for a variety of reasons, but one of them being the 5-year requirement and all that goes into that, and the additional debt and time that
is associated with getting that extra year of school. And then a profession that once people get into it, a lot of times they're like, you know what? No, I don't want to be a part of this. So there's pressure from all different sides. So that whole pipeline thing, and of course, there's the sales pipeline, which I tend to live in that world with my marketing hat on. But it's not just a challenge today, it's a challenge with no light at the end of the tunnel, unfortunately.
Absolutely not. Your talent shortages are going to continue. And you're spot on when you say there is a deficit, and it will continue to be a deficit. And there are multiple barriers. So when women enter public accounting, to make them feel like they're part of the pipeline, we have to start at the campus level. And there has to be an engagement process there where we start developing a future view, a horizontal view for young women to aspire to leadership, to engage in formal mentorship programs, to have equal access to high profile projects, promotions, and stretch assignments. And that can be done through succession planning. If firms are not doing succession planning right now, I would encourage them to engage as quickly as possible. The average for some of the larger firms, the average age is 53. Now, the retirement is 65. And when you look at that, that gap is going to change and close very, very quickly. And we're not going to be able to fill the appropriate roles with the right people. So the industry is going to have to change a little bit. And also, how we engage our talent and retain them is going to be very, very important.
Yes, I agree. I mentioned earlier that you were on my very first podcast episode. So
Yes.
thank you for coming back, my first repeat guest.
Yay.
And, at that time, we talked about some of the strides that firms are seeing in DEIB work. And, but also what we're seeing is some pushback after the Supreme Court's affirmative action ruling. And I'm going to be speaking on this topic at the AIM Summit in May. But what would you say to those that are tapping, or in some cases, downright stomping on the brakes in their DEIB work in this talent shortage?
I would encourage them to pause just for a second. Consider the business implications. Amidst pushback against DEIB initiatives, it's crucial to stand firm. You have to. It's not just a legal checkbox. It is the backbone of a thriving business strategy because an effective diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging program actually functions as a catalyst for innovation, curtails turnover, and amplifies profits. Now, I can say that, and that's great, but don't take my word for it. Go to the statistics. Let's look at some of them. Off the top of my head, Deloitte Review states that inclusive cultures are six times more likely to be innovative and agile. Resiliency is going to be a key competency as we keep seeing disruption in the workforce. Companies with above average diversity scores see a 19% more innovation in revenue. That's from Boston Consulting Group. When you look at the diversity reporting, those companies embracing diversity have significantly lower turnover and superior financial performance. And I'll give you a few more metrics. 22% lower turnover rates than those who don't have a diversity program. The Muse reported that. And when you consider the cost of losing an employee at 150% of their base salary, if you take the average of the turnover through the final last year and you cost that out, you can see the benefit. You can see the impact to the bottom line. Another reporting from Burson by Deloitte, those with diversity programs have 3.6 times better results dealing with performance issues. They also have 2.9 times are stronger in building leaders. So there are indications that you can retain, develop your leaders through diversity initiatives at a better pace, and that leads to profits. So let's talk about the bottom line and the business case. When we talk about profits, companies in the top quartile for ethnic diversity are 35% more likely to see financial returns. Now, come on, that's a pretty staggering amount. Companies in the top quartile for gender diversity are 15% more likely to perform better. So when you look at these, and this is not my number, this is McKinsey. I encourage you to do the research. Look at the data. These are strong indicators of what we can achieve if we embrace diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. Highly inclusive organizations generate 2.3 times more cash flow per employee. It's 1.4 times more revenue overall. I can't imagine going to a managing partner or a CEO and saying that I can deliver this to their bottom line and them saying, I'll pass.
Nah.
Nah, I don't feel like doing that. So I would encourage anybody who is listening to the shifts in the tide to really look at the data and don't trust just one data source. Look at the industry leaders like I have done. And pull the metrics. Consider what the impact will be on your business if we don't embrace this.
I could not agree more, and often use some of the same statistics that you just mentioned in presentations because they are really staggering. I mean, it's easy to say 2.3 times more cash flow per employee, but then do some math on that. Look at the real numbers that you're talking about.
And you and I know accountants are very good at modeling.
Exactly.
Yes,
So,
it's good exercise for us to
extrapolate on these, within your own firms. And another thing I would add to this conversation, I mean, these numbers are phenomenal and just tell the story in a way that is pretty undeniable.
Yes.
But when you're talking about this from a generational point of view, Gen Z is absolutely committed to the ideas of DEIB.
No
And
question.
I cannot pull up the numbers like you did, but there are statistics out there in studies that I've seen that show upwards of 80% of Gen Z employees won't take a job if they don't see that there is a active DEIB program, not
Absolutely.
just the, the letter on the website kind of thing. And a pretty similar amount I read would leave a job if they get there, see that it's just kind of lip service and not actually something that the company is committed to or the firm is committed to, they'll leave and go get another job, and they can.
They can, and they are. You brought up a great point. I would encourage people to look at the diversity turnover. There are organizations out there that laud that they have a fantastic, robust diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging program. But when they bring in their team members who are diverse, women, ethnicity, abilities, look at the turnover rates of those particular populations. And if you are seeing spikes in those, you've got an indication that that population is not seeing you walk the talk. And that disconnect undermines credibility.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many firms I've had conversations with that have said, we made a real effort to diversify our workforce. We hired a number of people with different ethnicities or LGBTQ or whatever the identifying factor is, but they didn't stay. So we're not going to really do that anymore. And I'm like, okay, here's the thing. Why didn't they stay? Hanging out your diversity shingle, I encourage that. I absolutely encourage, trying to diversify your workforce. But if you haven't created an inclusive culture where everybody feels that they're contributing and everybody feels that they belong there, then why would they stay? So often, and I know I've said this before on a podcast, is like you really have to focus on your culture and the inclusivity side of
Yeah,
DEIB even before the diversity side. Because,
absolutely. And can I add something? Because right there, when you say inclusivity, there's also a component of psychological safety. Because I do feel that individuals may come to the workforce and be concerned about revealing their authentic self. So they may not be comfortable with sharing their background or who they're married to or who's in their lifestyle, what they do in their personal time. If someone's doing a tick box exercise and saying, I'm doing all of the activities, but it's not embedded in the DNA and it's not part of their business strategy, then you're going to have the result that you're talking about, where everybody throws up their hands and says, well, we tried and it's not working. It takes diligence. It is not just an initiative for one group to launch. It is an organization-wide approach. And again, it's a cultural shift. So it is a big endeavor, not to mention it's constantly changing because we keep learning.
Yeah. And bring this full circle with something you mentioned earlier. It has to have leadership buy-in.
It must have leadership buy-in. And again, not lip service,
Right.
real leadership buy-in, where a leadership can stand and genuinely articulate the reason why diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging are important, not only to the individuals, but to the firm and to the community in which we serve.
You can't do the cart before the horse kind of thing.
You can't. You can't.
So, as someone who has been in this space for a little while, actually quite a while, what changes have you seen in how diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging are discussed? And what do you see on the horizon in the next few years?
Oh, there's so much coming, Bonnie, in so many different areas. So this is just one area, but it goes beyond reporting requirements. I still remember when, they started with diversity and inclusion and pushing it as an affirmative action plan. That's reporting requirements. It's moved beyond compliance. Organizations recognize that the actual impact lies in fostering a culture of inclusion, like you said. So, what the future holds, deeper understanding of what diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is, emphasizing the systemic change rather than a tick box, and being willing to constantly evolve and engage your population to have meaningful conversations, taking that feedback and figuring out how do we address this holistically for the organization. That is one key area that goes back to the strategic integration. It can't be just an isolated initiative. It must be part of the strategic strategy and woven into it. And that's why I like to use the term DNA. If it doesn't have strategic alignment, it will not garner the results that you want. Everything from talent acquisition or talent attraction to individuals leaving the organization. We have to develop cultural competencies, psychological safety, and resiliency.
I completely agree. Any other things that you want to add to that?
I would think that when you look at organizations say, I'm being transparent, I'm sharing my progress, and I have metrics. But are we being accountable? Are we sharing that transparently? Are we doing that with our employees and providing them sort of an outline of the measurable outcomes? What I can see is that in the future, progress is going to continue to be evaluated by representation, pay equity, employee satisfaction metrics. But you can expect AI-driven insights And I think it's going to expand to predictive analytics and evidence-based practices. The challenge that I am seeing right now, and it's going on with talent acquisition, is that we are using systems to evaluate candidacy. And when you look at the candidacy, if they don't have a standardized competency or baseline expectations, you may not be evaluating the candidates as robustly as you may think you are. So the competencies drive the decision-making for AI, and then you make the appropriate selections. If that is not established correctly, what you will end up finding is that you're getting the wrong recommendations from your bot in hiring, and you will actually create bias.
Yeah, and there's
So,
plenty of bias already.
yes, we
Yeah.
don't need more. We definitely don't need more.
So we talked a little bit about what is on the horizon, but I'd like to take one step back real quick and say, what are some of accounting firms' biggest mistakes in implementing DEI&B, and how can they be avoided?
Every journey is nuanced, and particularly diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging has a nuanced journey. And it is fraught with pitfalls. So, some of the potential pitfalls are the misplacement of burden or misplacement of ownership. So, placing the entire responsibility in one department, and where I have seen it, is that it's an HR initiative. Now, that is not engaging an entire organization. That is giving it to a human resources department, and then you are minimizing it to a checkbox. And we have very, very talented HR professionals out there who can take this and do it work. This is nothing to do with the professionals who are in HR. It has more to do with the ownership, because when someone owns something, then they're taking responsibility for a success. My recommendation is that everybody has to own it. So when we take action, the I is the one who owns it. So I would start with cross-functional teams. Make sure your committee is, get a committee together, cross-functional, different levels, because we have generational diversity as well. And make sure that these individuals are passionate about the efforts. And then help put them to work to champion the events, to learn from the population, and to share their findings. One of the other challenges, and this is one that is small, don't let the small things go. I think sometimes we have a tendency to ignore microaggressions. Microaggression can undermine the credibility of an organization. And they can be pervasive and actually affect your turnover rates as well. So I would encourage individuals to look at microaggressions and really address them promptly. Provide the training, create a respectful work environment, and also teach people how to engage when they hear microaggression. And when I say a microaggression, there may be an incident where individuals are all within a room or within a Zoom call having a conference call. And there may be one individual who will not allow certain key members of the team to get their points across. If there is a focus on women, ethnicity, age, all of those can be considered microaggressions. So we have to be self-aware, and we also have to be prepared. If we see something like that, even though we're saying it's micro, it can turn macro very quickly.
There's a great video that I often use in training sessions on microaggressions because I think a lot of
Really?
people don't know exactly what that is. But,
Okay.
when you were talking about micro can become macro, it actually compares each microaggression to a mosquito bite. So, one mosquito bite, annoying, you can ignore it. Three or four, you're getting pretty itchy about
Oh
now
yeah.
and uncomfortable. But then, as they grow,
I love
as
that.
you experience more and more, it becomes almost untenable. And that you're like feel like you're constantly being attacked. And a lot of times people say things that they may not realize are microaggressions. Or it's like, why are you overreacting? I'm just making a joke, or whatever that is, without realizing that that same person is already dealing with 10 mosquito bites and you're number 11 and 12.
I love that, Bonnie. That is such a great way to look at it because it's very similar. And yes, one little bite may not be a big issue. We all get our mosquito bites, but when you're covered, then that is it. That's not a manageable situation. And that's where self-awareness comes in. And that can be addressed through training, role modeling, role playing. There are a lot of ways to address it, but you're spot on with that one. I haven't heard that one before, so thank you for sharing that.
It's not my video, but it's one I use all the time.
And the only last two that I think are important for your audience to be aware of is don't value speed over equity in operations. In my prior role as COO, there's always 100 things to do, and we need to prioritize our results. But we have to make sure that our approach is equitable, especially in recruitment, hiring, promotion, and vendor selection. Those are some of the keys. So don't be too quick to jump. Balance the sense of urgency with fairness. So when you're approaching it, you're sure that your processes and practices are inclusive, that they do have the diversity lens, and they're actually equitable for all employees. And the last one, I just have to bring this up because I think this is one of the biggest pitfalls, treating diversity as a one-sided concept. So either race or gender, without recognizing the experiences of the individual. So, perfect example, you have a white woman who may also have abilities issues. There can be a combination of diversity. So, understanding the intersection and how we address these complexities is going to be key.
Intersectionality is not something that gets a lot of discussion, but I think it's something that probably will. We're, looking at future. I've been in situations where, particularly, I'm remembering one specifically about a Black woman who was kind of being asked to choose about whether she identifies more as Black or as a woman. And she's like, how
How
can
do you
separate those things? That's,
don't
you can't.
know?
And to make assumptions in any of those
No.
areas is also not a good idea for sure.
No. And as human beings, we're multi-dimensional and complex. If anything I have learned in human resources, human beings are complex and there are a lot of layers.
Yes. So before we finish with a single fun question today, what advice do you have for firms that want to be more inclusive and create a culture where everyone feels they belong and can contribute to not only their own success, but the success of the firm as a whole?
Gosh, I have a lot of suggestions, but you always know that.
Give me your top three.
I would look to leadership commitment. It has to start in the top. Leaders must embody the principles and integrate them into the values of the company, mission, vision, and values. That's absolutely a deal breaker if you do not have leadership commitment. I would encourage continuous education and awareness. So conduct regular training, start with foundational, and then layer on. And it can be things like implicit bias or unconscious bias, microaggression. What we're trying to build is competence. Think about it as learning in bite-sized pieces in order for people to digest it and then unpack it through meaningful dialogue with peers. When I say meaningful dialogue, there will be heated conversations if you conduct forums. So be prepared. The point is, this has a lot of energy around it. So you're going to be prepared to manage that energy and direct it to the appropriate direction. And when I say that, someone has the right to express a feeling during a forum. However, it must be delivered respectfully, and it's their perception, it's their fact, and they have to own it, and we will sit and listen, accept it, but no one should ever be allowed to be disrespectful. I would encourage people to foster an employee culture of empathy and seek to understand, be curious.
All of that for sure. And I like the idea of the bite-sized training so much so that I'm actually creating a talent LMS DEI education framework where accountants can go to listen to either a 10-minute session or maybe a 20-minute session, or they can add up to CPE, but where you want to have your firm learn about unconscious bias? Well, here's an opportunity to do so on their own timetable and at their own pace.
And at their own pace, and making sure that there is competency. So, in our practice or in my practice, where I work with leaders and roll out these programs, I try to look at it holistically. And education is one component, a necessary component. But I'd encourage even professionals to look at their ESG plans. And when they're doing community engagement and social responsibility, bring the intersection together, blend it. And encourage your local communities to work with you to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging. It not only builds great partnerships with your clients and your communities, but it also reinforces your commitment internally to your employees.
And often it opens up opportunities.
Yes, that is correct. That is a nice outcome, Bonnie. It is.
Yes. There's the this is just the right thing to do reasons. And then there are a lot of financial reasons and advancement reasons and reaching new markets reasons. It's not just a altruistic sort of thing. I believe this is something you should do because it's the right thing to do, but sometimes people need a financial incentive as well.
I'm going to ask you a question. If you are sitting in a CEO's role and I came to you and I said I can increase your business bottom line by 120%, as a CEO, would you be interested in pursuing the product, service, or activity that I am presenting?
I don't see anybody turning that down unless there is some horrible, unethical reason for it, and they're certainly not the case here.
No, we're doing good and we're doing good business.
Absolutely. Obviously, this is something you and I are both passionate about, and
Without question, my friend.
I hope that it spreads even further than it has, and the skepticism about this that's out there wanes entirely very soon.
I'm confident that it will.
All right, so to close, I
Yes.
have a fun question for you, one that I have not asked a guest yet. So, if you were to have a sandwich named after you, what would it contain?
Okay. Oh gosh. All right, it would have to be toasted. First of all, it would have to be a toasted multi-grain bread with a spread of hummus, which is the glue that kind of holds it together, a layer of colorful grilled vegetables, topped off with a little spicy feta to kind of bring all the flavors together. And I might call it MJM Spicy Delight. What do you think?
I would
Does that
order
suit
that
you?
sandwich. You had me all along, but when you ended with feta, you sealed the deal because a salty cheese is a happy place for me.
Happy place. And she don't say no to the cheese. Definitely do not.
Exactly. So I can't thank you enough, Mary. As always, this has been an enlightening and entertaining conversation. And I really am excited about you launching MJM Talent Solutions. And hopefully, we will get to talk again soon and maybe even see each other in person one day soon.
I certainly hope so. And Bonnie, let's pave the way for a more inclusive, equitable, and thriving future.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank
Thank
you for
you,
the
sir.
opportunity. Be well.
Thank you for listening to Move Like This. Brought to you by the Accounting Move Project and sponsored by Moss Adams and SACPRO. If you'd like to learn more,
Visit our website at accountingmoveproject.com. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues too. I'm your host, Bonnie Buell-Resick, and until next time, keep moving forward.